Most people will tell you that they weigh more than they'd like, and yet they just can't seem to lose those excess pounds and keep them off, no matter what diet they try. It's something Dr. Deepak Chopra addresses in his latest book, What Are You Hungry For? It's published by Harmony. Dr. Chopra, who is the author of over 75 books, which have been translated into over 35 languages, explores the reasons people overeat, often thoughtlessly, instead of advocating yet another crash diet or method of deprivation. And he joins me now with more details. Welcome to our show, Dr. Chopra.
Thank you, Leonard.
You appear to be in perfect health, and yet you start off admitting that you were 20 pounds overweight some 5 years ago, even though you were basically what you call a good eater.
Yeah, you just get into the habit of mindless eating. It becomes a conditioned response, and there's certain triggers that set that off. So once I became aware of that, I just started listening to my body.
I blame quitting smoking and getting older.
I also quit smoking, but that was a much longer time ago. When I was an intern resident in medicine, that was the done thing.
You say, I enjoyed what I ate and I ate what I enjoyed. What's wrong with that principle?
There's nothing wrong with that principle, except that when you start listening to your body, you certainly begin to realize that you're actually eating lots of things that you don't end up enjoying. Addiction is really not getting enough of what you don't want anymore.
Well, were you eating junk foods or were you eating good foods but just more than you should have?
I was doing both. You know, you automatically eat junk food. Let's say you go to a movie and you eat popcorn without even thinking about it.
With the butter, of course, because it tastes
butter,
better.
Of course. But all my life, you know, I've been interested in not only the mind-body connection, but the whole idea that everything in nature self-regulates itself. You will hardly see obese animals, except in labs, where they're force-fed or they're given diets or they're surrounded by excess food.
Or house pets. You do see an awful lot of fat dogs and cats.
Yeah, because we imbue them with our own consciousness. But in nature, you won't see that because biological organisms self-regulate, and they self-regulate to what we call homeostasis, which means a state of dynamic non-change in the midst of change. All your hormone levels, your body temperature, the biochemicals in your body stay within a certain range, which is what we call health, homeostasis. So we are the only species, actually, that has the ability to destroy that. And that is because we are influenced by external cues instead of internal cues.
When you were putting on weight, were you exercising?
Yeah, I exercise regularly. I exercise 7 days a week. But I wasn't, like, morbidly obese. I was maybe 20 pounds. And I lost that very quickly once I became aware.
Without dieting?
Without really dieting, yes.
You say that something as simple as sleep is important for this discussion.
Yes, because during sleep, there are two hormones that are involved that regulate both our satiety centers and our hunger levels. And these hormones are known as ghrelin and leptin. If you're sleep deprived, you lose the ability to self-regulate again. You're not so aware of your hunger levels. And this also then influences cortisol, which is the hormone that deposits belly fat. So belly fat is a result of an imbalance between insulin, ghrelin, leptin, and cortisol, all of which are, by the way, connected to both stress and lack of sleep.
Now, the Asian tradition is often to deny. Mahatma Gandhi was famous for fasting half the time. I was amused when I saw a restaurant in England called Gandhi. I'm thinking, why would a restaurant want to name itself after a man who starved himself half the time? But didn't you grow up in a certain in that tradition?
Yes and no. My father was a cardiologist trained in England. He was very westernized. We grew up in northern India and in a Punjabi family, which traditionally is a meat-eating family.
The Punjab is kind of like the Northwest agricultural center of India.
It is, but it's also, you know, northwest India, border of Pakistan. So we had the same kind of eating traditions. But of course, as a child, I was not obese at all or fat at all because, you know, we played and we were active and there was none of that. It's only after coming to the United States and working in a hospital environment, stressful environment. You know, hospitals next to prisons are the most stressful places to be in. And at least when I was training, every nurse was smoking, everybody was drinking a lot of coffee, and the only food available was McDonald's right inside the hospital.
Now,
so we had patients in the coronary care unit who were getting angioplasties and bypasses, and then were being given medium rare steaks after that with lots of fat and blubber.
Hospital food can be some of the worst food. When you were changing your approach to eating, were you ever worried that you'd become a purity nut?
Yes, and I did become one. Actually, I'm one now. I mean, I've slowly, even since writing the book, I have become more, I've gone more in that direction because I feel lighter, my sleep is better, I'm more energetic. I have this mantra in my mind, a joyful, energetic body, restful, alert mind. And I, you know, I'm 66, going on 67, and I haven't felt this good since I was 30 years old.
And you talk about awareness eating.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean?
It's very simple. Listen to your body. You know, you can put your hand over your stomach and ask yourself a simple question like, what am I hungry for? Most people aren't hungry for food when they eat. They're hungry for something else. You know, we eat when we're spiritually and emotionally hungry as well. As a child, when you were hungry and you cried, your mother immediately shoved a bottle in your mouth. Many times you were crying because you were uncomfortable, because maybe you were wet and you wanted to be picked up, but mother was busy doing something else. She gave you milk or something to eat, comfort food, and your brain started to associate that food with satisfying emotional hunger or other kinds of discomfort.
The baby may have just felt alone at the time.
That's right.
Ignored, and
that's
so
right.
Cried. And we said, okay, that's the putting the bottle in their mouth is the equivalent of later sticking them in front of the television set.
That's right, exactly. So whenever people put food in their body, it's one of two reasons. Either they're physically hungry for food or they're hungry for something else.
Let's go through some of the things that can interfere with eating well and how to counteract them, things that you write about. Bad habits and old conditioning.
It's always old conditioning. You know, there are grooves set in our neural networks through repetitive patterns of behavior. So after a while, we become conditions of response or reactivity. We become bundles of conditioned reflexes that are constantly being triggered by people, circumstance, media, advertising. And we don't even have time to stand back and watch. So if you just interrupt that reactive pattern, that's the beginning. I usually now ask myself not only what am I hungry for, but how hungry am I? Am I famished? Am I level one? Is my stomach totally empty? Or am I 10, like some people feel after Thanksgiving? Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you are comfortable, your body should, your level should be no more than 5. And when you're hungry, you should be down to a 1. And if you just keep that in mind, and, you know, I actually now wear a bracelet. So before I put anything in my mouth, I just look at this bracelet. It says, what are you hungry for? Mm-hmm. I made it for myself. And it's just to break that reactive pattern.
We may be a little hungry, but then when we start eating, we eat a lot more than would satisfy that little hunger.
Yeah, habit. You know, you either eat normal or you overeat or you start to crave or you become addicted. Those are the stages through which most people go through.
And connected to this is fear of change, perhaps family pressure not to change.
Eating is a cultural and social activity now.
Especially if you grew up in a family where love was often shown through food. Eat. Why aren't you eating?
That's right. And yet, you know, by the way, there's some very interesting research that in those places where eating is a celebration, even eating so-called toxic food influences hormones in such a way that you may not get the same rise in cholesterol or other substances when you're in a celebrative environment. So food is a very complex thing. It's influenced not only the amount you take is influenced by emotions, but how it's metabolized is influenced by emotions.
My guest is Deepak Chopra, whose latest book is What Are You Hungry For? The Chopra Solution to Permanent Weight Loss, Well-Being, and Lightness of Soul. And weight loss often involves dieting, and many people have tried diets and they haven't worked, and
they
so
work
they give
in the
up.
Short term. They work in the short term, but most people who go on a diet regain weight. So one of the things I talk about in this book is how we actually respond in life to only four things: sensations, images, feelings, and thoughts. You know, everything that we call experience fits into sensations, images, feelings, and thoughts. Once you become aware of this and you begin to listen to the sensations in your body and to your emotions, you'll know exactly how to fulfill those.
Well, would you explain what you mean when you write, to lose weight, you need to fill yourself up?
Yes. In fact, you need to find fulfillment, as the word is. So emotional fulfillment, spiritual fulfillment, fulfillment in terms of meaning, purpose, are all things that we need to be full of and not necessarily empty. We feed emotional hunger with food.
So do we get false messages of hunger? Is this a hormonal thing?
It influences the hormones, yes. Hormones are involved. Cortisol, insulin, the other hormones I mentioned, growth factors, they're all involved when we are not listening to our bodies. The key here is to be aware of the sensations, images, feelings, and thoughts in your consciousness.
What about the whole issue of the genetic component of obesity?
There is a genetic component, but, you know, our genes, the more we are learning about genes, their activities that are influenced by thoughts, feelings, emotions, behavior. I frequently now say to my geneticist friends, I'm doing a book called Super Genes with the chief of genetics at Harvard, and what he says is that genes are verbs, not nouns, which means that even though we have 23,000 genes, their behavior, their activity, is influenced by our habits, our social interactions, our culture, our thoughts, our feelings, our emotions. Only 5%, this is very interesting, only 5% of disease-related genes are fully penetrant. That includes everything from heart disease to Alzheimer's.
Is eating addictive? We have Overeaters Anonymous, which suggests that it's overeating is similar to alcoholism.
Yes. In fact, in the same neural networks are involved in the brain. And after a while, this addictive pattern actually starts to destroy what we call feedback loops in the brain. So, yes, addiction can be an activity. Eating can be as much an addiction as alcohol or drugs.
And then there's the whole matter of time pressure. Sometimes we just have to shove something down our mouths because we only have a short time to eat.
And it
influences something bad.
And it influences the way food is metabolized. So, you know, if you have – here's a very interesting study that came out long time ago. There were scientists who were feeding rabbits diets that were high in cholesterol. And they found to their amazement that there was one group of rabbits that did not get the high cholesterol levels, despite the fact that they were being fed the same food. After a while, they realized that the only difference between these rabbits and the ones that were getting the high cholesterol was that the technician who was feeding them was taking them out of their cages, petting them and cuddling them, and then giving the same poisonous food. But now this experience of being settled, calm, and happy influenced the neuropeptides in the brain in such a way that the food was metabolized into a different metabolic pathway. So your state of how you're feeling, emotional state, actually influences the metabolism of the food. And if you're driving a car, talking on your cell phone with Bluetooth and shoving down a sandwich at the same time, that food is going to be metabolized in a completely different metabolic pathway if you're eating the same food in a settled atmosphere.
What about calorie counting and looking on labels to see the cholesterol levels, the sugar levels?
I think it's useful to a great extent. It should not become obsessive. I started to look at that, and I started to become more aware of that. So any information that serves as feedback is very useful.
You have a variety of quizzes in this book, like what triggers you to overeat?
Yeah, it's just all these quizzes are just to become more mindful, to break conditioned patterns of behavior.
You say it's bad to eat the same few foods every day, to go on a mono diet. Are you talking about things like the Atkins diet there?
Yeah, because again, the Atkins diet can be very useful in the beginning, but of course there's lots of controversy about it now, inducing ketosis and things like that. The main thing with mono diets is that your body gets habituated. There's a phenomenon called tachyphylaxis, which means doing the same thing over and over again, then the body doesn't know how to break that pattern.
I would just be bored.
You would be bored.
You say you shouldn't eat when you're tired or in a bad mood, that you should shun one food group all the time, such as whole grains or you shouldn't
shun them.
Whole grains and fruits are good for you.
I have borrowed a lot of my methodologies here from ancient wisdom traditions, one that I come from called Ayurveda, which basically says the six tastes of life, sweet, sour, salt, bitter, pungent, astringent, are the most healthy because they supply all the micronutrients. If you look at our diets here, fast foods, they're sweet, sour, and salt, period. French fries, hamburgers, ketchup, and a Coke. Whereas if you go to an ethnic restaurant, go to any ethnic restaurant, Spanish, Italian, Thai, Chinese, Indian, and you will see that they have bitter foods, pungent foods, astringent foods, the whole variety of foods, and also the seven colors of the rainbow. Now, when you start to look at these foods, you find that they are very high in micronutrients and also what are called phytochemicals, which are chemicals derived from the energy of the sun. And they have a completely different effect, not only in the metabolism of the body, but on your satiety centers in the brain as well.
And most ethnic foods have a higher percentage of vegetables. Some are totally vegetarian, but they have a higher percentage of vegetables to meat than the American diet does. And actually, we see changes as Chinese and other cuisines become Americanized. More meat gets introduced.
That's true.
Just one more thing, because we've pretty much run out of time, but your book also has some recipes, and you have an unbelievable double chocolate cake made with tofu?
That's what, when you really get those cravings for comfort food. It's something we serve as a dessert at the Chopra Center.
And chocolate's okay?
Chocolate actually is pretty good.
It triggers
things like opiates and serotonin in your brain. That's why chocolate makes you happy. There's a reason for that.
And what is the tofu substituting for?
It's protein, basically.
Deepak Chopra's book, What Are You Hungry For? The Chopra Solution to Permanent Weight Loss, Well-Being, and Lightness of Soul. It is published by Harmony Books. I want to thank you so much for being on our show.
Thanks for having me. Next time we should discuss the nature of the universe.
Okay, let's do that.
Okay.